Everyone, welcome back to the Growth Signal. I am so excited to introduce you to my brand new friend, Shannon. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm super pumped to talk to you today.
So I always like to talk about how I connected with my different guests, and we actually met because we were both speakers at the Human to Human Summit with Dion Major. And Dion and I met because she was a guest on my other podcast. It's amazing how that like hop, skip, and a jump happens to these connections.
I love it. It's like the Kevin Bacon 6 degrees thing.
Yes. Oh my God. I need to just start having like one of those murder maps on the wall. That's all the different people that I know have some red lines connecting it. Cause I bet it would be incredible to see.
I bet it would. I bet it's like, you know, LinkedIn Plus.
That, okay. LinkedIn, if you're listening, develop that. I want to see all the different ways that I'm connected to, you know, the King of England. I don't want to see who posted about the thing that they're hawking on LinkedIn anymore. I want to see how I'm connected to different people throughout the world.
Exactly it. That's exactly it. How are we matching up in our business DNA?
Exactly. Okay. Yes. Like Ancestry.com, but for businesses. That's incredible. Okay. We've already come up with two new business ideas in the 15 minutes that we've been talking together. So I just know this is going to be a great conversation.
Love it.
I always love to open up these conversations with your origin story. So how did you get here? What forged you? Why are you the person that you are?
I love this question because it allows me to tell you how I was so upset working with consultants. I was working in a very heavy M&A environment in the life sciences, and we were constantly having to merge and integrate systems together, particularly Salesforce.com. And we would hire high-level, high-dollar consultants who were technically wonderful, who had no idea what the heck was going on in this very specific, very time-driven industry. And at one point, Alyssa, I threw my hands up and I said, you know, I think I can do this better myself. And that's exactly what I did. I quit my lovely job and started a business working on exactly what I thought was the biggest problem.
I dabbled in consulting for a couple of years. And it's so funny that you say that. Because when I talk about like, oh, I'm a consultant, I get either two reactions. One, glazed eyeballs because they have no idea what a consultant is,
right?
Or kind of a little bit of a cringe of, oh, you're one of those people who comes in and pretends like you know everything for a hot second, gives me a report and calls it a day, right?
Yes. And so many people, you know, make the joke like consultant, and I wouldn't say that was my experience, but you know, I found people who were just technical, you know, rock stars, geniuses, who had no idea about the industry. And so I spent so much time, instead of giving them our requirements, teaching them what they needed to know to build what we needed. And I was through with that.
Well, and especially in, like, you said you were in life sciences, right?
Right.
Unlike most of our organizations, that actually does have an impact on life and death. Like, we make a joke, like, nobody's going to die if they don't read this email.
Right.
But wasting time bogging down on implementations and merging and cross, you know, connecting all of your systems, that actually does have implications beyond just having a good work day versus not having a good work day.
It's so true. And when you read requirements and they're based on companies that are looking at protocols that are developing, you know, medical, either, you know, medicine or technology that is going to improve people's quality of life or make the difference between them living or not, that sure does change the way that you think about the tech that is assisting them to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a colleague that I used to work with, and I work in technology consulting, right? So it's like nobody is at risk of dying, and we're not going to change, you know, medical innovation because we didn't get that internal email approved. And she made a comment. We were working like crazy. We'd been through 7 layers of approvals on this one internal email that no one's probably going to read. And she stopped and she said, why are we doing this? Like, nobody is going to die if this internal email doesn't get approved. And why are we arguing about what should be bolded and what shouldn't be bolded? It's not that serious.
It's wild. There's a lot of conversation about, do we change happy to glad? When the reality is, we're just trying to get to the right content to keep things moving along.
Yeah. And it's so funny in our workplace culture is like, that's something that people will obsess over and get like hung up on. But again, it's not that serious. You're just trying to convey a basic human emotion. Pick one.
That's exactly right. And I think that's one of the things that's been wonderful that came out of COVID about, you know, our quarantine period, which is everybody's welcome and happy to get on video now. So it feels a little bit more face to face and tone can be arranged better than it can asynchronously. And that has been a change that I have absolutely adored.
I love that too. I was an in-person employee, right? Like we had an office on site. So I feel like I really got to know my coworkers and I loved working on site, but I'm home now and I do enjoy like working from home. But even when I was physically on site, all of my clients were on the coast. So I'm in Iowa. I work for large technology companies. There are not that many here to be had. So I can't just like drive a couple hours away and have a meeting. So all of my meetings were over Google Meet or over Zoom. And so I had to learn how to do that in that environment. But I do think it's a skill that people have to have. Like you have to work twice as hard to build relationships and to convey things. I mean, when I'm on Zoom, you have to put on extra makeup because it doesn't show up in the same way that it would in real life.
Right.
Right. And so in the same way, we have to work twice as hard to build relationships, to convey what we're trying to say and to build that connection and rapport.
I agree with you. The difference between 2D and 3D is a big one. And I think it's not insurmountable, but it does shift the way that you think about your own soft skills. So how do I convey emotion with my face? How do I let people know that I'm listening? That if we were sitting around a conference room table, I might sit up a little bit taller and lean in to let you know. But you can't tell that as much when we're on these flat screens.
What I also have, like when people aren't making eye contact on Zoom and they're just like taking notes, I'm like, are you taking notes? Or are you just like totally checked out on me? You don't care what I have to say.
Right. Are you texting under the table? If I know what the top of your head looks like, that's never a good thing.
100%. Or if I've never even seen your face because your camera's always off.
Right. That's a challenge. And I think I came from a company that was video first. We were global.
Yeah. Us too.
Yeah. So that was a nice transition, but there were a lot of companies that weren't. And they were so anxious. And when you get on and see a bunch of black boxes, that is not easy to deal with.
No, it very much, I'm using this phrase a lot lately, but like shouting into the void almost. Like, I'm just going to sit here and talk to myself. And even though like people respond back, I totally get it. Now, sometimes camera off, you know, whatever. But I feel like we have to remember that at the end of the day, we are all just people, you know, kind of circling back to that conversation we had about human to human. Yes, we're communicating via Zoom, but we are still people on the other side of these webcams. And I don't think that you can just shove AI in there and hope for the best. So tell me about your experience when it comes to adoption, when it comes to getting people who need and would benefit from adding this software or this tool or this process to their experience. How do you help them drive forward that relationship with their tools while keeping that human experience at the heart of it?
Such a wonderful and deep question that has a multitude of layers to the answer. But I think it starts exactly where you were talking about, is meeting people where they are. So understanding that humans are organic masses that are just wired to take that path of least resistance. So understanding that making a big change all at once is not the way that the human brain is wired to accept. So the heuristics, the planning, the change management, the communication, that all falls into adoption. And then you have to consider a larger, wider organism. So what's their organization like? What's the culture of the organization? And, you know, frankly, how comfortable are they with technology? Because we've got four generations in the workforce now, and that youngest one, they were born with phones in their hand. What a FaceTime call for them is a normal way to talk to their friends. So they don't mind hopping on. They don't care if their hair is in a bun or they have makeup on. But when you've got folks who are a little bit older, it's disconcerting for them to see themselves. And so when you think about any technology, it's really, how do we meet people where they are and establish those quick wins so that they can find that comfort to move forward?
I love that you talked about the fact that we have four generations in the workforce right now. I'm a millennial, so I grew up when, you know, if someone picked up the phone, I got kicked off the internet, right? So I kind of grew up with the best of both worlds. I remember VHS and cassette tapes. I remember having that dial-up internet noise, but I also remember, you know, what I have now, which is my $1,000 smartphone computer in my pocket experience that I'm having and driving into the age of AI. When you are talking with people who are of a different generation, how much of that informs, like how much of that makeup of the workforce informs your decision about how you would roll something out?
A lot of it, an awful lot of it. So you think about the concept of diffusion of innovations. And if you've never read the wonderful book, Crossing the Chasm, I think that does a nice job of explaining it. But it's a traditional bell curve, and you've got people who are innovators and early adopters. They're just going to do it because they're interested, they're curious, and that doesn't hold itself to a generation. You know, there are people that just like to try and break new things. And then you have people who are laggards who say, I'll never do it. I don't want to do it. Please don't make me do anything any differently. So the real concept is, how do we get to those folks in the middle, the early and late majority, so that they can feel comfortable with that thing? And establishing before you do an implementation, an integration, a new product rollout, how is the majority going to respond? That's where you then focus your efforts.
As a early adopter myself, I sometimes get frustrated with people who like won't get it together. Like, come on, guys, it's just something new. Let's try it. But it just occurred to me as you were talking, if all of us were early adopters, nothing would ever stick because I'm on to the next thing, right? I am not sticking with anything because I'm excited about, you know, my shiny squirrel moment of, ooh, squirrel over there. I'm excited. But it really does require, just like our population requires like a normalized curve and everyone's different, but we all kind of fall on the same spectrum. You know, early adoption, despite my frustration with people who won't just get it together, really follows that same experience, and it's for a reason. When you're thinking about getting this going and thinking about, I'm assuming most of your work is like post-sale, like the software has been sold, the decision has been made, this is what we're doing. So what is the first thing that you do when you sense resistance in an organization to adopting a new tool or technology?
A lot of times I will just do a show and tell. So exactly like you would have done in first grade, share your screen and show me exactly where you're at. Because sometimes people can't figure out how to log into a system, and that's a very real problem. You know, we've got lots of security that makes it harder for people who now are trying to access authenticator apps. That's another additional step. And every time you add a step, that's another level of friction. So yeah. I will say, just share your screen. I'll help you through it. Show me where you're getting stuck, and we'll be able to ascertain how to keep you moving forward. And I think doing that sort of diagnostic makes people feel a little more comfortable. And you can say, this happens to everyone. Don't worry about it. It's not you. Technology is challenging.
Yeah, it's only great when it works, right?
Right.
I love that you specifically made a comment about share your screen, because I think a lot of times we'll be like, oh, look at my screen. Watch me click around, you know, the system that I inherently understand. I work with someone and she's like, I can always tell when you're excited about something because your mouse starts moving really fast when we're like working on stuff. And I can imagine, though, that would be super overwhelming if you are brand new to a software. Maybe you're not excited. And you're trying to, you know, do the right thing, understand what you're being asked to do. But maybe it's, you know, not something that you're genuinely excited about. One of the complaints we hear from people who work in post-sales roles is that sometimes sales kind of screws us over a little bit. They sell something that maybe didn't exist, or yeah, a dream that didn't, I mean, never, no sellers that I know would ever do such a thing. So, like, do you ever have that experience? And if so, like, how do you overcome that? How do you change the narrative to better reflect the reality rather than the promise?
We definitely see that a lot as well, right? And I think sometimes it is people get very excited when they see a demo. A lot of times it is the art of the possible, or it requires a lot more than the system they have agreed to has as possibility, right? So I oftentimes will just use the house analogy, because everybody has stepped foot into a house, and say, you know, when you think about building a new house, you're walking into a model home and they're showing you everything that's possible. So that washing machine that puts the dishes away by itself, you didn't pay for that option. That one's not here in your system. So here's what we could do instead. And so a lot of times thinking about how you can break something down into a story, which I know you value because you've told me that before, helps people understand. So instead of being frustrated with the technology, they say, oh, I get it. I paid for the drywall. I really like the pictures that were on that model home, but those just aren't in my house yet.
Yeah, I think it's really important, too, that you're putting it in context, right? So notice that you didn't blame the salesperson in that example, because it's very easy to be like, well, Gary sold you something that's not real, so Gary sucks, right? Because it's very easy to do that, especially if it's, you know, Gary's third, fourth, or fifth time doing that. Right. But you put it in something that is a universal experience that we can all understand. So not in the context of your software, not in the context of your experiences, but that universality of it.
Right. And I think that's helpful because, again, it brings it back to that human to human connection and says, I can totally understand why you would have been excited about that. That is an exciting thing. We're not there yet. Your system isn't set up for that yet. That's another addition. It's something you should put on your roadmap. For now, let's get focused on what you do have.
So when I think about adoption and software adoption and those services, my mind immediately goes to how can we get that initial like time to value where they actually get something out of the software that they purchase. But how much of that pressure do you feel to make sure that they're kind of set up for that renewal someday?
Right. You know, for us, we get an awful lot of rescue work where somebody didn't get in the very beginning of the build and say, let's think about what the humans are doing who are at the other end of this. So if they have a quota on their side, if they have to accept so many tier one calls in 60 minutes, we can't have them clicking 17 times because they're never going to be able to reach their goals that are set upon them. So considering how we can design the system, not just to produce the output that's desired by management, but also to make it easy for the humans is the best way to do it. When we come in on a rescue work, we try our best to sort of work backwards on that so that they will say, okay, now I see how this can be helpful to me. So we've sort of re-engineered the way that they're interacting with the system, which will help to push them back to say, I do want to keep working on this. I will renew these licenses. This adds an awful lot to my business.
I like that too, because it's about now, right? We're getting that value now, but we're also planning for continued value so that that renewal becomes an obvious decision rather than, you know, just something that they have to do or have to be, you know, encouraged to do. Right. You mentioned that you come into a lot of rescue situations. How many times have you seen, and I've seen it a ton, so I'm sure you've seen it even more, people buy a system and all they think about is the purchase, and the company that is selling whatever they're selling hasn't made a plan for actually using that system, like a post-sale plan?
A lot, an awful lot. And I think sometimes it's just naivete. They don't know what they don't know. And this is where business analysts are so beautiful and wonderful. And I know a lot of organizations, business analyst is still a pretty nascent role, but it allows them to say not just what are your requirements for the system, but how then will that be applied? And it's helpful to paint that picture for this company who they don't know what they need. This is the first time they'll be rolling out something like this. So we don't want to take what they've done on Excel and directly apply that to software because that negates the value of having software that's got a better process inherently enabled. So stopping, slowing down and saying, great, this is your process now. How can we fix it before we apply to technology is the best way to get at that and avoid that discrepancy where somebody's just launched something new and then they're disappointed by it.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point is the expectation setting and understanding how people process information and how people process learning, right? Because it's not as easy as just saying, here's the thing, now you know it.
Right. And I think I'm glad that you brought up learning because a lot of times we'll implement a system, we as a general industry, and then train people and then just ride off into the sunset. And they may not need to do the thing that we showed them for 3, 6, 9 months. And by the time they need to do it, they have no idea what to do. They're too embarrassed to say, I know I learned this, but I don't know how to do it. And so the way that you train and support users is really critical.
Right. Your leave behind materials are almost more important than the actual time you've spent with them.
Yes.
Incredible. I agree with you. I've seen bad implementations. So I'm glad that you're changing the world and making those a lot better. I always like to come back to the individual person. So Shannon, what are you working on right now?
I am working on a couple of cool projects myself, and I never stop rolling up my sleeves. So I like to keep my hands dirty inside of, you know, what's happening with our clients. And I'm watching a lot of companies be really strategic, which is cool. Because what we saw, again, during the quarantine portion of the pandemic is hurry up and make it available for everybody to work from home. No strategy, no thought, no idea how long we're going to be doing this. And now everybody's right-sizing their tech stack. They're thinking about scalability. So I'm working with two companies right now who are saying, how do I take multiple business units or products and get them into a place where we're all in the same system, but can control visibility and security and reporting and I love that stuff.
I agree. I'm very much like a roll up my sleeves, problem solving kind of person. Like if I have to do something that I already know how to do, I'm not nearly as satisfied if there's something I don't know how to do and I have to figure it out.
I love that. It's great for your brain. It keeps tickling your brain, and I think that's why we're alive.
Exactly. That makes life worth living, right?
I think so.
So, Shannon, as you think about all of the incredible people you've had a chance to meet, be it, customers or coworkers or your childhood best friend, who is leading the charge? Who is changing the way we think about building relationships with our customers?
My absolute number one favorite guru, who I reference every day as if we were friends and we do not know each other, is Dr. Carol Dweck, who wrote a book called Mindset.
We
I
love
learned.
Dr. Carol. She's so good.
She's so good. And she did this brilliant job of being a Stanford psychologist who wrote a book that it is attainable and ingestible for normal humans who are not Stanford psychologists. And I've read this book now several times as a boss, as a parent, as a sports coach. And I love the way that her concepts can be applied to any situation. And the whole idea of praising the effort and not necessarily the outcome allows us to say, let's fail fast. Let's learn from the things that didn't work. And it keeps this really healthy innovation environment that I am just obsessed with.
I love that you make the comment praising the effort and not the outcome. I'm a very competitive person and I have small children, so 5 and 9, almost 6, as my 5-year-old currently tells me.
Oh.
And they are just now getting into the world of competitive sports. And so I have to actively like check myself to remember that they're 9 and this is not the World Series and it's not that serious, but to really make sure that I'm okay, yeah, you lost that game, but here's the things that you did really well. You ran straight through first base and you did whatever the things. That's really important, not only as parents, but as leaders, right? As we think about the relationships we build with our teams, because we've had this whole conversation about, adoption and technology and helping people learn how to use it most effectively. But so much of that comes back to the leaders at the organizations that we're helping. And if they don't have great leadership in place, we can do all the implementation we want. It's never going to be what it could be.
You are so right. There's some primary research that has just been published in the last 6 months, three different studies that are talking about AI-enabled CRM and how it gets adopted. And the thing that all three of them found has not changed from any other research that we've seen on adoption and is top management support. So having folks at the top saying, this is the tone, this is our culture, is so critical and will continue to be so. It's just not shifting, even at the pace of change in technology.
Yeah, the systems we've created have not, we don't ha we haven't built the cultures to keep up with the systems we've all created.
Right. That's exactly right. And, humans still have that same caveman brain that's in fight or flight mode, and that has to be, considered and addressed. And so, thinking about executives and leaders, how do you praise people who take a chance and maybe don't get where you need to go, but learn enough things to push further next time? That's critical.
Yeah. Shannon, if someone is really connecting with you, they want to learn more, they need help, they have an implementation on fire, where can they find you online?
I love LinkedIn. I'm a huge fan of LinkedIn. I'm not a fan of the games on LinkedIn, but I am a fan of what you and I are about to build and sell there. Yes. But please find me on LinkedIn. I use ShannonJ.Gregg so that I can always tell when there's LinkedIn automation, because if it says Dear Shannon J. Dot, I know we don't know each other.
I need to add that to my thing because I am so sick of the hey, Alyssa, plant growth emoji, star emoji, whatever. So yeah, smart. I love that AI hack. So everyone, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, Shannon, for joining us. This was an incredible conversation. And if you are looking for help helping people understand how to use their technology better, how to change the way they build relationships with their customers and with technology, please reach out to Shannon. Thank you for joining me on the Growth Signal.
Thank you for having me on. It was a pleasure.